throughout the day, like, don't forget, like, to look around and, like, really take it all in and embrace it. Like, we're skipping to, like, the pep talk that you get at the end of this podcast, but, like, the here and now fitness, like, part of the here and now is, like, try to live in the moment, right? Like, enjoy the moments for what they are. Like, you've trained, you've put all this work in, like, let it be a celebration of all the hard work you've done. Like, enjoy the moments, look around, like, breathe the fresh air, look at the mountains, like, appreciate the competitors, like, appreciate what you're capable, like, healthy enough to do. Like, not everyone is so lucky enough to be healthy enough to be out there and doing what you're going to do, you know?
Times are related, is your currency. Oh, you can spend it how you like.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. This is Pat McCauley, as always. My guest this week is Coach Tom Fleck. If you have been following the show for a while, this will be Tom's fourth time on, believe it or not. Tom is my triathlon coach. He is a very accomplished triathlete himself, and he is the founder of Here and Now Fitness based south of Boston. That's who I train with and use the facility during the winter and things like that. If you are interested in Tom's full story, his last episode, episode 150, I highly recommend. He has a super inspirational story from, you know, a 300-pound guy to now literally coaching triathletes, and he just qualified for Ironman 70.3 World Championships in his age group. So to go from where he was to now, like, teaching people like me how to do triathlon is just incredible. And that episode blew up. I'll leave links in the show notes. It's episode 150 again. Cannot recommend it enough. So we catch up quickly in this episode with Tom and all he's accomplished this year with his racing. And then we get into talking about my upcoming race, Ironman Timberman in New Hampshire. It's a 70.3 on August 22nd. And this will be my first official race. You know, I've been a triathlete for the last year and a half, but have not raced because of COVID. So this is the first one on my calendar. So I had a ton of questions for Coach Tom, like everything, like all the nitty gritty and questions, probably a lot of newbie triathletes or people that have are just getting into the sport might have. So we talk about kind of the tactics on the swim and how what my approach should be as kind of like a very average swimmer. We talk about the transition from the swim to the bike, everything from the wetsuit to the watch, like above or below the wetsuit to like putting socks on for the bike or for the run, or just like all the nitty gritty of these questions that I have going into this race next week. We talk about how to go through aid stations on the bike while you're like traveling at 20 miles an hour. We talk about why it's all about steady output on the bike. We talk about how much and when, to consume nutrition, tactics for the run and how it should be hopefully a slow build on the run for me. Why it's really all about managing my heart rate. That's the most kind of important aspect of the race. And then we talk at the end, Coach Tom's predictions on my time for Ironman Timberman 70.3. So I will be filming, I'll be posting a ton on Instagram and elsewhere, pre-race and post-race. So hopefully if you guys are interested, you can follow along there. So yeah, I hope this provides a ton of value for people interested in the sport. I have grown to love it over the past year and a half. And I'm excited to get out there and actually see what I can do for the first time. So I will see you guys next week, hopefully with some positive news. So without further ado, Coach Tom Fleck and myself.
Times are related, is your currency.
All right, Coach Fleck in the building.
Hi, everyone.
He's back. So, third time? Is this third or fourth?
Is this an official podcast?
This would be an official podcast.
This would be the third official podcast that we've done.
Third official podcast.
Third or fourth? Fourth.
Fourth.
The first one was at my house in Hingham.
Yep.
The second one was in Weymouth.
Yep.
The third one was downstairs. This will be four.
Yep. So, Yeah, and your last episode blew up.
Sick.
The last one was big.
That's because I cried at the end and talked.
That's
about,
because
I cried and talked about my feelings.
We all cried the whole time.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
No, but it was a amazing episode. Still get messages.
Sick.
On that episode today, yeah. Which is amazing. But
it's interesting though. So first one yeah, second, yeah. Like, I also have like been. People have contacted me to tell me that like they've identified with it, like they could have similar experiences. Like that's ultimately why I try to share my experience, is because I know that there are people out there that can identify with the different things that we all go through as humans. So I'm happy that people still reach out, and I'm grateful for all the people that reached out to me directly that said it affected them and that it inspired them to do one thing or another. So
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's give just a quick for the all the Coach Fleck fans out there. Let's give like a quick recap. So last time we chatted, you were, you know, it was your goal to qualify for Worlds for 70.3.
Yeah.
So fill us in on kind of what's happened this season.
So the last time that we sat down was this past winter, right? We were coming
like
into
January
the season. Yeah, it was cold downstairs, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my goal was to come into the season and have a good season. And the beginning of the season got messed up. The main race that I was getting ready for, which was Ironman Texas, got canceled again because of COVID. So we pivoted and took that training block and put it towards the Providence Marathon, which I did really well in, and did a open marathon PR of like 19 minutes. I then did 70.3 Waco and qualified for Worlds with a 70.3 PR. And then I had Lake Placid on my schedule, which was in July. And Lake Placid was an incredible experience. I had two athletes there with me that were doing their first Ironman event, and they both did fantastic. They both finished and I think exceeded their expectations for what they thought they were capable of. I personally did fair there. I did what my training allowed me to do. I probably had a little bit too busy of a schedule going into it and not enough proper intentional build into the actual event. But it's just part of training in the whole cycle of seasons of training and learning how to properly structure a training calendar or a racing calendar through a season. So I didn't do as well there as I wanted to personally, but you can never finish an Ironman triathlon, especially one as difficult as Lake Placid, and be negative about it. Like, to execute it and get to the finish line and be there and had the weekend that we had, for me, is a success, right? Like, I can pout all I want about not doing as well as I wanted to, but the reality is it's just bullshit. Like, it was an incredible weekend all around. So
yeah,
and now we have the rest of the season still yet to come. As of right now, I have two races left on the calendar. I have a 70.3 in Old Orchard Beach the last Sunday in August, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow. And then we have St. George 70.3 Worlds in September, which we qualified for down in Waco, Texas back in June. So that's going to be exciting. My expectations for those events is I want to perform well in Maine and be competitive at the top of my age group. And when I get to 70.3 Worlds, I honestly have no idea what to expect. 70.3 Worlds is going to be the best athletes from my age group, from near and far. Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty accustomed to any race that I do coming in the top quarter of my age group anyway. And I honestly have no idea. Like, every single person that's at that race in my age group has at least that, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I have no idea what to expect. So yeah. I'm going there, and I'm telling myself that it's not going to be as competitive for me. I'm kind of going to enjoy the experience. But, of course, like, once you get to town and, like, you put your bike together and you see the other athletes and all of a sudden the competitive juices are flowing, like, I want to do well.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's exciting. But it's an accomplishment, like, in itself just to be there. So I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. And that was your big goal back when we talked, I think, in January.
Well, my big goal was always to get to Kona. I always want to qualify for the full distance world championships.
Yeah.
But I talked to someone before it all, and he said that I was a little bit crazy to think that I could have the expectation to qualify for both 4 weeks apart. And it turns out he was right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but it's totally a goal that I wanted to achieve, and I've achieved. And it's going to be an incredible trip. Like, we're all going to go out there. My wife and three daughters are going to go. My parents are going to come out. My sister and her two kids are going to come out. And St. George is supposed to be, like, one of the most beautiful places around. So it's going to be just an incredible experience.
So does that 70.3 qualifying that you did,
yeah,
that accomplishment, like, was it what you felt it was going to be, like, personally? Personally.
Wow, coming out hot with that question.
Coming out hot.
That's an interesting question. But I think it speaks more to even, like, when you accomplish a goal that you set out to do, like, how do you feel about it once you've actually accomplished it, right? Like, because if and when it's possible that I could qualify for Kona, like, when that moment comes, like, how do I feel about that? Like, when I think back on the actual event itself in Waco, I did a 4 hour and 38 minute half Ironman, which is, for me, fast, for a lot of people, fast. And I remember being disappointed because I wanted to be faster.
Yeah.
So there's something psychological about, like, at what point are you actually satisfied with the accomplishment? Because yeah. I remember, like, I knew that that time had given me the qualification, like, the moment I crossed the finish line. But I was still disappointed, like, that moment at the finish line, that I was 5 minutes slower than I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Right? So, it honestly, like, it's a hard question to answer because yeah. I don't know that, like, it takes a lot of self-searching or self-actualization to put a goal down or put a goal out into the universe, accomplish the goal, and be dissatisfied in with the manner with in which it's accomplished, right? Because that's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think about, really. Like,
yeah, it's one of those things. Like, you need, like, it's the gift and the curse of kind of, like, driven people in right. whatever aspect. It's like, the second you accomplish something, it's like, okay, what's
next?
The next goal?
Right.
Like, okay.
But is that a healthy mindset to carry in life?
Yeah.
Like,
but I feel like you gotta take the time to celebrate the fact that you did what you thought 7 years ago was fucking
impossible.
Totally impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, that's, I guess, a little bit.
And maybe you take 48 hours
yeah. yeah.
and celebrate, but then it's on to the next, you know?
But I do. Like, I do yeah. take quiet moments of reflection, and, like, yeah. part of my daily practice anyway is trying to think and reflect on, like, what I'm actually grateful for in my life. And, like, a lot of those times is actually when I'm out training, like, those quiet moments when I'm by myself and, like, the sun's coming up, and, like, I those are the moments where I find those quiet moments of reflection to think, like I'm just a knucklehead that, like, is out here doing what I love. Like, how lucky am I? And it gives me the moment of pause to reflect on it all and be grateful. But it's always a passing moment, right? And it's always like, okay, what's the next thing? Like,
yeah,
what's the next goal to do? And, of course, like, so I'm going to do Maine, and already, like, I was texting with one of my athletes earlier, an hour ago, talking about, like, what our splits are going to be for Maine. He came to Texas with me, and I already, like, told them I want to be faster than I was in Texas by
yeah.
3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And, of course, like, when you get to that high end, of there's only marginal gains to be had, right?
Right.
You're not going to drop a PR at the top of your age group by more than, like, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes,
right.
5 minutes, right? Depending on the course, of course.
Yeah.
So, but, like, I'm on to the main. Like, I want to do better than I did in Texas. That's my goal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love it, man. Yeah. I love it. Well, let's get into it. So, this is kind of like our pre-my
sure.
race session that we're doing here, and also recording. But I have a million questions.
Okay.
On, like,
let's
the actual.
We're not here all night.
The actual race day,
I'm just
right?
Teasing. Yeah, yeah.
But before I start asking those,
yeah.
give me, like, the coach's recap of my training over the past, whatever it's been now, a year. Thoughts?
Okay. So it's an interesting question because most of the athletes that I coach are very type A, right? The software that we use, Training Peaks, they have every day a calendar that every Saturday I fill out.
I know
the
where
week,
this is
every
going.
Saturday I fill out the week ahead. And it has every day exactly what you're supposed to do, Monday through Sunday, every week. And there's some people, more than one, that literally will not miss a single workout. They have their scheduled off days. Everything is written intentionally by me, the coach, to not create too much training stress, to add in recovery, the whole nine yards. There's some people that don't miss a box. That's one end of the spectrum. Then on the very further end is Pat McCauley. And I put his plan up every week.
It's a good guidelines.
I
see it as guidelines.
And I picture myself dropping 7 yards step drop into the pocket to throw a Hail Mary to see if he's actually going to do them. So that's the training recap for the last. No, I'm just teasing. But I will say, like, ultimately, the thing I keep an eye on is overall volume, right? Because it shows you, it adds up what you actually do, and it totals it every week for volume, for total volume, for swim volume, bike volume, and run volume. So I've always kept an eye on the total volume to make sure that you're at least getting close to the amount of volume that I think is appropriate to have you ready for the event, mm-hmm. right? There's been some weeks where I added extra shit because I knew that you were only going to do 75% of it. Love but that. I knew that at the end, that 75% would hit the volume number that I wanted, right? So I feel like that given that you are just the kind of guy that has a lot going on and doesn't have the type A personality, that you get it in when you can. You do the best you can with your schedule. The reason that you got into the sport was not to be militant about being super disciplined about doing it. You wanted to do it because you wanted to challenge yourself. You wanted to spend time outside running and riding and swimming and doing all the things that are involved in the day-to-day training. And that's why you do it. And that's how you've basically structured your training. You travel, you go places, you get the workouts in when you can. There's some you like that you do all the time. There's some that you like that you do some of the time. 100%. There's some that you don't like that you do none of the time. But in the end, I think that we've gotten to the same place of being ready to take on a 70.3, right? It was supposed to be a full, but of course the race that you were supposed to do got canceled because of COVID. So here we are getting ready to do the 70.3. So I think it has been a learning process though for you. Like, I think that there have been times where you have felt a little bit of a sense of urgency that you have tried to dial it in, like in the last probably 5 to 6 weeks. I can see that there are times, some weeks, not this past week, but that you've made more of an effort to make sure that you hit as many as you can. But that's okay. Like, everyone does it and participates in it for their own reasons. And I can support and work around just about any of them, given the right context. So that's my recap for the last year. But I think also, like, that's a very broad picture. Like, the reality is like, you started off not knowing how to swim, right? Now you can swim comfortably. Like you said, we were on a bike ride this morning. You're like, yeah, I swam in the ocean the other day. I didn't wear a wetsuit. I couldn't believe how comfortable I felt swimming in the water.
And it was like, choppy too.
Yeah.
Like I would have been scared shitless a year ago.
And I said to you in that moment, I said, are you surprised though? Because like for the last year, you've been swimming consistently like 2 times a week. So are you surprised that like you put that volume in, you put that work in and you feel more comfortable? Like the same thing with the bike. Like you started off, like you're a strong runner. You've had the strong running background. But the bike, you've done a lot of bike volume over the last year, right? And we were just talking before we started to record, like, if we had tried to do the ride that we did today and you tried to hold on to us, to the group, at the pace we were going today, you would have been smoked. Like, you had no shot. But today, like, we weren't riding easy. Like, we were pushing at times, right?
Yeah.
And you hung with us the whole time. Like, no problem.
Yeah. I felt like I could have ran after, too, you know?
Yeah.
Which is mind-blowing to me even 6 months ago.
Right. So I think that – but it takes time. There's no – we were at the track on Thursday morning and I was talking to two guys as we were doing the cool down. And I said, there is no magic pill. There's no piece of tech. There's no supplement. There is nothing that is going to get you the results other than consistency. I call it the green box brigade, right? Other than just doing the work day after day for consistently for a long amount of time.
Yeah.
Right. And it's been a year of relative consistency. Like, there's never been a time where you said, like, fuck it, I'm not going to do anything. Like, you've always remained relatively consistent, committed to the program of, like, always doing it to the best of your ability, never stepping away from it.
I'm never going to, like, not be around for 3 days.
Right.
Like, I do something every day.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So that is the magic bullet, is this is the consistency. And for me, that's the magic of everything in life, right? If you want to get better at anything in life, like, do it and practice it. Find someone to help you get better at it and just do it consistently.
Mm.
And that is how it happens. So that, like, kudos to you for sticking with it. Like, I remember when we first sat down, if we went back and played the first one and we talked about, like, what is your expectations for Ironman training? It's a good question for you. Like, I talked to Connor and Scott before the Ironman Lake Placid. And one of the questions I asked them is, was the training, is it what you expected when you signed on? Like, how was the actual execution of a year of training versus what you expected? What was it in your mind? Is it what you expected?
I think it was what I expected, but probably harder than what I expected. I just didn't know what I didn't know. You know what I mean? I probably didn't know the amount of volume you need.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it is what it is, and you adjust. And so it's probably different in terms of like the amount it takes and just how hard it is. Yeah. And I think I said that the last time we talked, like, you know, like just being humbled by it and thinking like, you know, average runner to Ironman in 6 months was like a easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And it just isn't. Right. You know?
I will say that Ironman is just a different game than anything. Like an average runner or above average runner to half Ironman in 6 months, like no problem. Right.
Right. Right.
But Ironman, and I said this to Connor and Scott after Lake Placid, to get ready for an Ironman properly, it takes your life out of balance, right? It needs so much volume to prepare to be able to execute that event that you inevitably just end up committing more of your life than you should to the training. And it takes your life out of balance in the favor of that. Like, your wife gets pissed at you, you can't do your job as well, you don't sleep as much, like, the whole nine yards. Your life comes out of balance. It's just the inevitability of doing an Ironman. And it's always a good thing, like, after you do an Ironman, to be able to check yourself and, like, bring your life back into balance, right?
Right.
So, like, And when you say it's more than you thought it was, like, I think about whether or not if you had signed on just to do a half Ironman versus, like, the intent from the beginning was always to do a full.
Yeah.
Right? So that was always the intention behind the plan that I was writing, was to get ready for a full.
Yeah.
So I wonder if we had set off with the goal of doing a half, if you would feel the same way.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think it was good.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a 6 month to a year harder than it would have been if it was a half. And it was just kind of like a, you know, shocked me into it all.
Sure.
It was good. It was good. But yeah, to your point, like with the balance, like, you know, for me and you, I know, like you're a dad first.
Sure.
Then you're a triathlete.
Yeah.
Like I'm a boyfriend. I have my business. I have my podcast, and then I'm a triathlete, you know? And I just, like, put that into, like, that comes at the bottom.
Sure. The know? Hierarchy, of course.
In day-to-day, it just comes at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, I'll always work out every day, but it might not be,
right.
You know,
so,
what I should be doing to, you know, to be what I need to be. But
so it's a good question, actually, that comes to my mind as you say that. Like, you're about to go do your first actual organized triathlon, right?
Yeah.
You've never done a triathlon other than the little makeshift one that we did at Sandy Beach.
I've been a COVID triathlete.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it something that you can picture yourself doing long term? Like, do you like it? Like,
yeah.
Or is it going to be like, you're going to do this season, you're going to do the half that you have in your calendar, and that's it?
No, I feel like I'm going to be doing this for a while. You know, unless, like, I find myself, like, really traveling around the world or something for work or something like that. But even then, I feel like that'd be a fun thing to keep doing to some extent.
Sure.
Like, I feel myself always being prepared to, like, you know, show up to a 70.3.
Yeah.
And then maybe when life lets me, to be able to do some longer stuff. But I do like, in, like, one big thing for me was, like, when I was just running, right, and doing some weight training or whatever, I got injured way more. Like, when I was running, like, 6 days a week,
right,
it was, like, Achilles problems and just way more, like, issues.
Yeah.
And I've noticed specifically with the bike, too, but specifically swimming does something to loosen my joints or something in the pool that, like, I just don't have any of the aches and pains or like
it's incredible,
any of that.
Isn't it? How swimming does that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And I've done that from really running less.
Yeah.
You know?
And let me ask, like, has that, how has that affected your run fitness? Have you gotten
slower? No.
Right. So that's,
I mean,
that's the insane part.
Yeah. Like I'm
faster than you
faster
were.
Faster than I've ever been.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
By far. By the way, we're going to have to do another sub 5 attempt in September.
Somebody called you out for it. I saw that.
I got called up by a buddy, but
yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
Do you think you got the sub 5?
I think I'm a lot closer than last time.
What did you do last time? I thought you were 5:17. Yeah.
5:17. GPS had me at I think right at 5.
Yeah.
Maybe even 4:59. But the GPS was
so
off.
What is the 5:17? That's the measured mile on the track?
That's exactly 1 mile on
the track. Yeah.
I'm under 5:10. I know it.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But
it was good conditions or it was windy the last time?
It was windy and it was winter.
Yeah.
You know? So I think we'll pick a good day, low wind. But anyway, I got a ton of questions.
Okay, so let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So
as you prepare to do your first 70.3, what do you want to know that we haven't covered to date?
So
race logistics.
Swim.
Yeah.
All right, so going in for the swim, knowing my ability.
Yeah.
And knowing the fact that I've never, you know, swam on somebody's toes.
Sure.
I've never swam with 1,000 people.
Yeah.
What should, like, my plan be? Should I kind of creep out to the far right or left and kind of try to, you know, not be too in the mix? Or should I try to get on somebody having never done that before? Or, like, what do you think I should do specifically, like where I should fit into the swim?
I would say the first thing to do is to familiarize yourself with the actual course itself, right? Like, do you know the course and what the shape of the swim course is?
Yeah, it's like out to the right, then it's almost like a diamond. It's like out to the right, it's up to a point.
Four right turns,
back.
Right?
Yeah, it's four left turns.
Left turns.
Or I don't know which way it goes, actually.
Well, it makes a difference. Like, what side of the buoy's on? What side do you breathe to?
I'm pretty sure it's left turns, but I could be wrong.
What side do you breathe to when you swim?
I breathe to my right.
And are the buoys on your left or your right?
This is a great question.
You want to familiarize yourself with the course is the very first thing, right? So typically...
Tell me why that would make a difference. Yeah.
Because if you are looking and breathing to the side where you don't actually see the buoys, you it's harder to keep track of them, right?
Well,
especially
I
when you sight
more.
When you sight, like, it's easier to sight as you breathe, right? So if you have to sight and then look the other way, like, it becomes a little more difficult. It's always easier... And also, if you're sighting to the side of the buoys, you can, if this is the buoy line and you can just keep the steady crowd, you don't even have to sight, right? Because people are going to find their line and people are going to swim straight on the buoys. So if you can put yourself 10 feet to the side and just keep your eye on one or two people that has a good line while you're breathing naturally.
Right, so I want to keep, this is good.
Okay.
I want to keep people on
now
my
I'm
right.
I'm going to look up the course.
I want to keep people on my right.
But let's
like
see
I
want to
find
is.
Somebody that's decent and keep them on my right.
So the other interesting...
So that I'm looking at them the whole time.
Right. You want to keep people in your line of vision as you breathe.
Yep.
Okay. So the other interesting thing is every other Ironman brand event I've done, they've done a time trial start where you basically line up 5 abreast and they march you down into a corral with like the metal gates like you're starting a horse race. Right. And then every 5 seconds... They send
There's
5 more people out. There's a beep, a buzzer goes, and 5 people go. 5 seconds, 5 people go.
Yep.
Until the whole field gets in the water.
Yep.
At Lake Placid, for the first time, they didn't do that, and I had never seen it before.
It was just everybody go?
They basically grab... So when you're on the beach getting ready to get into the water and into that 5 abreast line, there are giant corrals of people. You self-seed yourself based on your expected swim time, right? So for a half... There is the under 30-minute swim, which is the front pack, right?
Yep.
Then there's 30 to 35-minute, your expected swim time. 35 to 40-minute, 40 to 45. So at Lake Placid, what they did, they have the same thing, except it's under an hour
right.
to an hour 05, hour 05 to hour 10, and so on and so forth. But instead of getting us in that order and then just marching us to the gates, they basically took those big groups of a couple hundred people of an hour to an hour 05 and said, go. And all of a sudden, 300 people ran into the water.
Yeah.
And it was insane. Like, I swear to God, in Lake Placid, the first few hundred yards of the swim was the most intense thing out of it. It was like being in a washing machine. Like, I swear to God, like, it was like if you were in a shipwreck and there were dead bodies. Like, you were swimming over people. Like, your head was out of the water the entire time. There was no room to swim. Like, I swear to God, at some point, I swam perpendicular to someone. Like, there was like the person was just an idiot, like, coming across, like, the wrong way. It was insane, like, fighting elbows, people, like, literally pulling your legs down because they're trying to swim behind you and, like, pushing your body down into the water.
So hopefully that is not the case here at Timmerman.
Normally, I don't think it is. Hold on. Let me look at the course.
Yeah, let's get the course up.
Course swim. So the buoys on the course map are on your left.
Okay.
But that's not right.
That's what I thought.
That's not right.
So it's left
They'll be
turns?
On your right. They'll be on your right.
They'll be on my right.
They'll be on your right. And you breathe
and
to your right?
And it'll be right turns?
Yes.
Yeah, I breathe
no.
on my right.
No. It'll be left turns.
Buoys on the... So that the buoys have to be on the left.
Oh,
then.
Sorry. You're right. The buoys will be on your left and it'll be left turns.
All right. So I'm blind.
So you're fucked.
So I'm fucked. But I can. So should I hug the buoys on my left and still try to follow somebody on my right side?
No. The best
or
thing
should
to do,
I go out to the right?
The best thing to do is
because I'd rather
see
not
yourself
be
correctly.
Like,
ready? This is what you should
totally
do.
Totally in the.
When you're on the beach, yeah. Go to the start that is 35 to 40 minutes.
Yep.
Put yourself right in the meaty part of that pack, yep. Right? Let me see what that pace is. My handy dandy calculator.
Yeah, what are we projecting here while we're on that?
This is just an app that I download. So 2150 yards. Let's say, I just want to see what the pace is for a 39 minute swim.
39? Is that what you're calling?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I just want to see. That's 148. That might be a little fast. But you should put yourself right in that group of 35 to 40 minutes. Put yourself at the back of the group.
Yeah.
Right?
So are we calling? Can we? Let's get this out
go.
There. Are we calling in about 40 minutes, you think?
Yeah. I would say 39 minutes. 39. Okay. Just under 40 minutes.
And are you slower during this or are you faster?
Than what? A pool swim?
Like than me just swimming on my own. Like, are you faster because...
Well, your adrenaline's going to be through the roof.
Right, but also, like, is there some sort of current you're
of
getting
course.
With people?
Imagine however many people were there, 1,500 people,
yeah.
All swimming in the same direction at the same time.
Yeah.
Of course there's a current. Like, is that...
So I will be probably faster than, like, my normal...
Well, have you ever swum the distance straight through? Usually,
no.
Even at Sandy Beach, when you do those
open
water
swims
for time.
I mean, I have in a pool, but I'm always stopping at the wall.
But that's not straight through.
Yeah. Right.
But you'll be right around there, right? The key for the swim, so the swim is the one discipline where you can't just muscle your way through it. It's all about efficiency.
Yeah.
It's efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. And that comes through being smooth and steady. Like, you can't create more power unless you have... You can only do what you have with the technique that you have, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about, like, keeping your breath, making sure you're in your swim rhythm that you're comfortable with. Like, don't go out there and crush yourself. Like, the first couple of buoys, when your adrenaline is going to be through the roof, like...
You want to dial it back.
You want to... It's going to happen no matter how hard you fight it. It happens.
Yeah.
It's your first triathlon. There's going to be energy in the air. The music's going to be playing. The sun's going to be coming up.
Yeah.
You're going to have your race adrenaline going. But after you get to that second or third buoy and the crowd or whoever you're with kind of thins out, get into your rhythm that you feel comfortable with, right? Just find that rhythm that normally if you're swimming at Sandy Beach and you're not going all out, but you're like, wow, I feel good today. This feels okay. I can hold this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the pace you want to get out at, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to sight. And swimming on someone's feet is not hard to do, but it's also something that comes with practice. Like in Lake Placid, after I got through the washing machine of the first three or four buoys, I found one guy who I stayed right behind him the entire time. Literally, both laps, I was on this guy's feet.
Yeah.
You do a lap, you get out at the beach, and then you get back in the water to do the second lap. Like, he got out at the beach, he stopped at the table and took a water. I was like, okay, I'll stop and wait for him. Because I remember, like, I was on his feet. And what it does, it's like drafting on the bike, but even a greater effect. Like, they say that water is... I don't know, whatever, much denser than air.
Yeah.
So then when you break the air on a bike and you're right behind someone, you create a huge drag efficiency.
Right.
So the same thing in the water. Like, when you're on someone's toes, like, they literally will pull you along. And I remember being on this guy's feet and trying to think to myself, okay, this is a manageable pace. I feel good. And at certain points, you think, like, okay, this is too slow. I can swim faster than this. But the reality is, like, I tried to come around the guy. I came off his feet and tried to come around him. And as soon as I did, he would start to swim away.
Yeah.
So the perfect pair of feet to find is someone that will pull you along at a speed that you normally can do in a pool, 148, but you only have to use 70% of your effort instead of the 80% that it normally takes.
Right.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Of course, like, and you can't be afraid to touch people's feet. Like, fuck them. Like, you're racing. Like, you're there. It's legal to draft in the swim. If you can do it, do it. Like, if you find a single person that you're like, okay, well, I feel comfortable behind this person, stay on their feet.
Yeah.
And, like, if you feel like you're going too slow, try it. Try to come off of them and see how it goes. And there'll be at times where the person will surge and you have to kind of hurry and really go all out to get back on their feet. But once you get back on the feet, you feel like you can settle into the rhythm again.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is, when I first find that person, I'll sight to make sure that they have a good line and make sure that they know what they're doing and they know how to sight.
Right.
And once I believe in them, I will basically cut the amount of sighting breaths I take in half, right? I'll still check every 10 breaths instead of every 5 to make sure that they're on their line. But just taking that sighting breath also helps too.
Okay, so rough rule of thumb, sight every 10 breaths. And then the buoys,
that's
is that
if
every
you're
100
on
yards?
That's if you're on someone's feet.
Okay.
If you're not, you want to check more than that. I would say every five breaths.
Okay. And the buoys, are they ever?
Every
100
yards,
100?
Normally.
Okay. All right. So game
every
plan.
Course is a little bit different.
So let's wrap up swim here
yeah.
and get into T1 here.
Yeah, yeah.
So swim pretty much under control. Like, I'm not trying to...
Hard and fast for the first couple buoys.
Once
and
I get out,
settle in.
Probably hang a little bit out to the right. Try to have somebody to my right.
If you feel more comfortable in space, give yourself the space.
Yeah.
If you feel comfortable with your like, literally the guy's feet were right here in front of me.
Yeah.
I was literally at times like I could have went like this and touched his feet.
Yeah. This is like me on the road bike. Like it's
yeah.
Same
you
deal. Like
yeah.
I'm not comfortable on the
right,
wheel.
Right. Right. Yeah, no. That's right. But that's if that's how you feel comfortable.
Ideally, a little bit out to the right, but there's still somebody to my right. So kind of.
So
on
you
the
breathe
edge.
To your left.
I breathe to my right.
So you breathe to your right.
So I want somebody to my right.
Yeah, but once you get too far away, the only person that's going to be out to your right is going to be the idiot that doesn't know how to swim, that is way off course.
Okay, so should I?
I would just get right in the meat of the pack and go for it.
Just go for it.
And just sight.
Let's pull some yeah. legs.
Like, it's just bad luck.
Let's get kicked in the face.
It's just bad luck that the buoys are on your offside, and
yeah.
it happens. You just deal with it.
Yeah,
the next race, they're on your good side.
I don't care.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, transition. Yeah. This is like super minute question. I always wear my watch over my wetsuit. Should I not do that?
Why do you do that?
Does it because so I can hit start?
But how long does your wetsuit come down? Like, my wetsuit always ends just below it. I always put it so it's.
Oh, okay, okay. But what I'm saying is, when I go to take the wetsuit off,
yeah,
like, is that going to be a problem? Like, do I have to take my watch off quick?
I'm going to ask an even bigger question.
Yeah.
Why do you need the watch in the swim?
I just wanted to record my first try.
Yeah. That, okay.
I wanted to Strava
sure,
that
sure,
shit, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's legitimate. Because that's the only way. Like, Strava is literally the only reason.
Yeah,
because what happens, or what I've discovered for myself anyway.
I won't know my heart rate.
You don't know your
heart rate.
As soon as you get out of the water and you press the button for transition in the multi-sport mode on the Garmin watch, as soon as you press... In triathlon mode, the lap button, it goes to T1.
Yeah.
And then when you come out of T1, you push it again,
right.
And that starts the bike, right?
Right.
But it'll pull your heart rate up, and it'll show you.
But I don't have heart rate on this watch. And
no,
I
no,
won't
you,
swim
but
with
you
one.
Wear your chest strap underneath.
All right, so this is something
okay,
we should
so we
talk
didn't
about.
Even talk about
because
pre-race.
I don't have
we
a...
We didn't talk about pre-race.
Yeah, because I...
We skipped right to the swim stuff.
Yeah, so because I don't have a waterproof heart rate monitor.
What do you have?
I just have a running heart rate monitor. That's all I use.
What model is it?
It's like the Garmin
that's
running one.
Yeah, that's okay.
The red one?
Yeah, totally.
All right, we're going to... All right.
100%.
It is
usable.
100%?
Yes, totally.
Okay, it says it isn't, but...
It right. says it where? It's not waterproof?
It's the Garmin run.
Yeah, the red one.
Yeah, the red one.
It's I wore
I,
that
I've
one.
Never swam with it. Yeah.
So what do you... You have your kit, right?
I got my kit.
Okay, so you put your kit on, you put that on, you pull your kit up, you put your wetsuit on, and you never fuck with the Harry monitor again.
Okay.
You just leave it underneath there.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Okay, and
I promise.
do you as we get into the bike, do you like my preference would be not to wear the thing.
The what?
Do you think
the
that's
watch?
Stupid? The heart rate monitor.
No, that's the stupidest
stupid?
Thing I've ever heard in my life.
Okay. Like I just
how else are you gonna monitor your effort on the bike? Perceived effort?
I just feel yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd almost rather not like no, oh shit, my heart rate's 160 right now.
But this is the whole point, is you like you
because then that scares me that I'm not going to have enough juice in the tank.
But
and then that gets to my
head.
But
this is what's going to tell you, right? Is that you... So racing a 70.3 is a simple, simple science. Lactate threshold is the boundary that you can't cross.
Right.
On the bike and the run. If you want to have enough juice in your legs to get to the end of the run and feel strong, you cannot operate above lactate threshold.
Okay.
And you cannot know where you are relative to that threshold without your heart rate monitor.
Yep.
You're going to get out. I'll tell you right now what's going to happen. You're going to get out of the water. Heart rate's going to be 175 beats per minute.
Yeah.
You're going to say, fuck, right?
Yep.
You're going to get on your bike. Rack your bike in the small ring. I'll say it again. Rack your bike. Rack your bike in the...
No, I'm embarrassed already.
Rack your bike in the small ring, right? I don't care who you are. Rack your bike in the small ring.
All right.
And spend the first few minutes... In the small ring, right? If it's a downhill, okay, go on the big ring. Spend the first 2 miles, 3 miles of the race going, but letting your heart rate come down. Yeah. Like, if you look at a heart rate profile of any person that finishes at the top of the age group, pros, their heart rate is jacked out of the water. And then for the next 3, 4, 5 miles, it will come down.
Yeah.
The heart rate. Mm-hmm. But they're still moving, right? They're not soft pedaling.
Yeah.
But they're operating at a level that their heart rate will continuously come down.
Yeah.
Not stay high. If it's staying high, slow down.
Yeah.
You have to basically use the heart rate to bring the use the heart rate reading to gauge the effort enough to let it come down. Right? Yep. And then once you're down into zone one, that's when you can, okay, now I'm going to go, right? So once you get it down to 145 or 150, yep, which is actually the bottom of zone two, right?
And I should be aiming...
If you can keep the average heart rate exactly...
Around 145?
At the middle to bottom of zone two, 145 to 150.
Under 150.
Under 150,
yep,
average.
Yep.
And you get off the bike, you're golden. If you get, yep, off the bike and you want to let it progress a little as you bike the 56 miles... And you get off the bike and you're right at the top of your zone two, which the top of the zone two for us is what we call a lactate threshold, right?
Yep.
As soon as, like, 155, because you want to push a little bit at the end, if you get off and your heart rate's at 155, perfect, right? Because your average will still be down, mm-hmm, there. You would have not spent a lot of time above lactate threshold.
Yep.
Your body can still convert the simple carbs that you're giving it back into some sort of usable glycogen. Won't be as fast as you're burning it, but it'll offset what you're burning enough, mm-hmm, to give you some energy for a little bit longer, mm-hmm, right? So that's the bike. When you talk about the run, when you start running, again, the reason why you want to use the heart rate monitor, you get off the bike and immediately start in the bottom of zone two, right? So you're going to be at right there anyway. If you end at 155, you're going to start running. As soon as you start running, it's going to go right there to 158, 159,
right,
160.
Right.
Run the first 3 or 4 miles at 160, right? Just keep it right there.
Yeah.
And for the next 10 miles from mile three, let it just creep up. Okay, 161. Okay, 162. Okay, now you're at mile 5, 160. And you look down, you see 163. By the time you get to mile 10, 8, 9, 10, if you're at the top of zone 2 and you're at 165 and you're going to be hurting a little bit because you're now at 4.5 hours into your day,
mm-hmm,
and your heart rate's going to be 165, just let it rip. Like, say, okay, I have 3 miles. I'm going to empty,
yeah,
the tank.
So
I'm going
to empty 10 the tank. Is when you, is
the last
when you
few
drop,
miles, it doesn't
the
matter.
Drops.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you have the energy to have those last 3 miles be as fast as the first 3 miles, and at the end you're cooked, then you've done it right.
Okay.
But again, it comes down to using the heart rate monitor as the tool to do that.
Okay.
Especially for someone that is without power, which is okay. The heart,
yeah,
rate monitor is just as effective at doing it.
Yeah.
Like, some of the best times that I've done in the 70.3 distance, that is my exact strategy.
Yeah.
You come out of the water, your heart rate is through the roof. You spend the first 5 miles on the bike, bringing it down into the middle, bottom, top of zone one, right to that top of zone one, and then you kind of just steadily bring it back up to the top of zone two.
Yeah.
As you finish the bike, you get off the bike, you start your run at the very bottom of zone two, and you let your heart rate progress right to the top of zone two till you have a few miles left to go, and,
yeah,
you're hurting, and you just dig deep and go,
yeah,
for it.
I hear that.
It's actually a,
yeah, yeah,
a simple thing to,
yeah, and
conceptualize,
I will say too,
but it's a little bit,
yeah,
execution is,
yeah,
it's not, if you're disciplined enough, it's not terribly difficult.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So,
okay, that was good. That was good. So let me get into T1 real quick, because I got some questions,
sure,
on T1.
Okay, okay.
All right, so I'll figure out the watch.
Wear the watch on the swim.
So
wear
the
watch. Record it for Strava.
When I come out of the water,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, I take top half of my wetsuit on.
Yeah.
Is there always somebody that rips it off for,
no,
you?
They, okay, used to have wetsuit strippers there.
Yeah.
That you would just take the top half
not
off.
In the COVID
you would sit
world,
down
though,
on your butt.
Yeah,
and
they rip it off.
Yeah,
right?
But they don't do,
yeah,
that anymore.
Okay. So I got to get out of my wetsuit. So I run to my bike, then get out of my wetsuit at my bike.
I take the zipper off as I'm coming out of the water. The,
yep,
first thing I do when I pop up and put my feet on the ground is I reach for the zipper and,
yep,
unzip it. And I'll usually just peel it down to my waist and leave it right there and take my swim cap off, take my goggles off, put them in my
leave
hand.
It right. Right.
No, you run with it on your bottom half.
Yeah, okay.
You run to your bike with the wetsuit on your bottom half.
Then,
right?
You peel it at your bike.
Then you peel it at your bike.
And you leave it at your station.
Yes.
Yep.
And then you just,
okay,
full yard sale. Don't worry about packing the shit up. Just leave,
yeah,
it on,
yeah,
the ground right there. You'll get,
yep,
it later.
That's when you pick up your first kit of nutrition and all that shit, right?
I do a gel before I get in the water. So we didn't,
yeah,
talk about pre-race logistics.
Yeah.
But you have a routine that you do before a long day.
Yeah.
This morning you rode long.
Should we, let's come back to that.
Okay.
Just so we're not jumping around.
Okay,
we'll finish with nutrition.
So what I do is I get out, and what I would typically do is I have all my nutrition loaded on the bike, so I don't waste time. And
yep.
That's the beauty of the bike is you're sitting there, and if you have the stuff at arm's length, you can grab it. You don't yep. have to waste the time standing in transition to do it. Do it when you're on the bike, yep. right? Even if it takes you
Have it on the bike. You yes. have all your nutrition on the bike.
Yes, especially for a 70.3 distance. Yep.
Okay, socks.
Socks on, yes.
You put socks on pre-bike?
Yes, always.
Okay.
Some people don't. Some people do. For me, I always put socks on.
Yep. Okay. So socks on, hop on and go. I mean,
yes, but so the other thing to think about, too, is the day before, when there's a mandatory bike check the day before the race.
Yeah.
So that means the race is on Sunday?
Yeah.
On Saturday, you have to go there and leave your bike in transition.
Right.
So that means that when you're in transition, you want to walk around and make sure that
exactly
where you're going to swim
in
and run when you swim,
yeah.
where you're going to take your bike out,
yep.
where you're going to bike in, and where you're going to run out.
Yep.
So the way that Ironman does it is to neutralize the racks within the transition. They usually have a corral, and they make everybody go corner to corner, right? So even if the swim is over here, they'll make everybody run to one corner on the outside of it. They'll set up a corral with another gate to dump everybody into one corner, and they'll make everybody leave the other corner.
Yep.
So that means that no matter where you are within that rectangle, that you have to basically cover the entire corner-to-corner distance of the rectangle,
gotcha.
Right? But you should do the same thing. You should know where your bike is within the rectangle, know the fastest path from each one. So the reason I say this is because when you say just hop on and ride, you don't actually hop on your bike in transition.
Right.
You have to run with your bike out to the street when there's actually a mount line. There's a tape line. They put a piece of tape on the ground.
So are you running in your socks?
Well, this is a good question. Normally, the people that practice it will leave their shoes on their bike.
Right, I've seen that, yep.
If you've never done it before, don't
not
do it on race
it.
Day.
I'm not going to do it.
Put your socks and shoes on in transition, put your helmet on, grab your bike, and then run out to where you can mount it.
I'm running
in
my
your shoes.
Bike shoes.
That's right.
Okay. Yep.
And usually they have mats on the ground. Usually transition is a grass area. And
right,
so usually it's
I
grass.
Slip,
and then
hopefully.
Once you get out, if there is pavement, they'll put mats down. Uh-huh. Some kind of 6 foot wide mat that you run on until you get out to the bike line.
Yep.
But you just go for it. Like everyone's out there running in their bike shoes. It's just clumpy and awkward.
Yep.
It just is what it is.
Okay. Okay.
So then, yes, you hop on your bike and
all
ride
right.
away.
And then on the bike, about every half hour, there's an aid station.
Well,
right.
again, this is where I go back to doing a little bit of recon because it's all right here. Ready? If you go to the bike, it actually shows you the map. Shows you
exactly where that aid station is.
So let's
see.
So there's the there's the start. Boop, 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 boop. And on this particular map, the aid stations are not drawn in. But usually they're listed.
But I mean.
But yes, usually they're like every 10 or 11 miles, right? So on a 50 loop course, there'll be four.
Yeah.
Right? Or four or five water stops. Yeah. So that means that every half an hour you have the opportunity.
And there's Gatorade there.
There's Gatorade, water, bananas, gel.
Okay, now when you go into an aid station, are people holding out bottles? So
you
don't stop.
You don't stop.
Right? You're just hopefully getting a bottle.
You have to
slow down.
Yes, or be able to grab one at high speed.
Okay, so I'm slowing down.
Yeah. yeah.
But trying to be efficient, and
yes.
and it's just like people with their hands out.
But as you come by, you grab it, right? Like at Lake Placid, I didn't really slow down at all.
Yeah.
I just go by, and it's an art. As you go by, basically, if you try to just catch it and hit it, you'll knock it out of their hands every time. You have to basically, it's like egg toss when you're a kid. When you throw someone the egg, you have to catch it so it doesn't break. So when you're going by at 20 miles an hour, you gotta accept it, right? Like a hockey pass.
Okay.
You gotta take it in. Yeah. So
all right. So
and if you knock one down, usually the aid stations are stretched out pretty far. So there's always an opportunity for a second chance if you start early on.
All right. So I guess we're tying in nutrition a little bit here, but basically I'm having all my nutrition on the bike. I'm gonna put a bunch of gels in a water bottle.
Yeah.
Per
year. So what I do is I load two gels per hour that I'm expect to be on the bike. Training or racing.
Right. I'll have six gels in a water bottle.
Perfect.
Right. So that's 1,200 calories.
600 calories. It's 100 calories per gel.
Mine are like 180.
Oh, really?
Mine are almost 200.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay then.
Yeah, I want more.
Yeah.
Give me that.
Yes. No, if it doesn't cause you any intestinal GI problems,
it'll be close
to
1,000 calories.
Yes,
for me.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yep.
So So I'm sipping on that. I'm sipping on that the whole time. I'm picking up a fresh water bottle of Gatorade every 30 minutes.
Yes.
Yep.
So as you come into the aid station, you finish the bottle that you
I'm
have.
I'm finishing the bottle every time.
Throw it to the side. They have a big thing. Sometimes they have hockey nets. You throw it into the hockey net on the side of the road.
Okay.
And then you pick up a new one. And then you take a big sip, and then you put it in your water bottle.
Okay,
holder.
So as you're coming in, you dish?
Yeah.
Okay.
They have a spot. That's proper and they have people, they have volunteers with rakes that are picking up everybody's all stuff right. That's dished. And then there's a sign, no more trash past this point.
Right.
So you have to get rid of all your stuff before a certain point.
And on the bike, how close is drafting considered? 10, 15 feet?
It's 12 meters. 6 meters?
So basically, I just shouldn't be behind somebody regardless.
But if you rode like you rode today,
yeah. You're
fine.
Okay.
If you rode like you rode today, you'll be fine.
Okay.
Right? But let's talk about the nutrition. Go back on the bike for a second. When you're down in aero, you always have the most gains to be made when you're going fast, right?
Yeah.
So every time you come up out of your aero bars, all that wind resistance all of a sudden gets added back, right?
Yeah.
So that is not the time to be sipping. Anytime you come up into a hill where you're going to come out of your aero bars anyway to give yourself a break is the time that you reach for your bottle, do your nutrition.
Slug it.
Anytime you're coming down a hill or at the bottom of a hill on a flat, you want to be as low and as efficient as possible.
Yeah.
Right? So that's just something to remember, too. Like, you want that efficiency. You don't want to be going down a hill, sitting up, or on a flat, sitting up, drinking water. You want to do it while you're sitting up anyway, coming up a hill.
Yep.
So, okay.
All right, so bike.
We're gonna cut that.
Anything else you think I need to know on the bike?
So the only other thing about the bike is just how you ride. And I've seen you ride. It's just about efficiency, right? You never mash the pedals. You use all
never
your gears.
Yep.
You don't want to, what we call, burn the match of having to go spike your heart rate up way high to get up a hill and think you're going to... It's the most efficient bike ride is done at an even output throughout the entire thing, right?
Right.
So that, again, comes back to your heart rate, right? When you're going up a hill, you want to use your easy gears so your heart rate doesn't spike. You want to keep it right where you want to keep it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The heart rate has a lag, which is why we use power on the bike, because power gives you an instantaneous feedback of your output. Then the heart rate will always lag 15 to 20 seconds after that, right? You know, if you keep your power steady, then your heart rate won't spike. Right, but if you don't have a power meter, then you don't know. You go hard, your heart rate spikes.
Yep.
Right, so yes. So ride efficiently. Be smart with when you take the nutrition. Make sure you get a bottle at every aid station. If you drop something, if something goes wrong, don't just say fuck it. I don't need that. If you drop, drop your bottle with the 6 gels, stop. Take the 30
absolutely.
Seconds and get it.
Yeah.
Like you say that like it's common sense, but you'd be amazed at how many stories you hear like. I dropped my bottle of nutrition and I didn't want to stop because I was racing.
Yeah.
I dropped my salt and I didn't want to stop. Like, I have athletes of personal stories that I don't want to name names, but they know who they are.
Yeah.
That, like, literally have, like, dropped their shit and they said they don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And they're fucked. Like, because, like, you can get by, but all of a sudden you get out on the run and you don't have the nutrition and you're fucked.
It'll cost you 60 seconds.
Yes, yes,
you know? I mean,
yes. So if something goes wrong, like, and that's the other thing about racing. Inevitably, like,
things will go wrong. Yeah.
It's not like you have to be able to control what you can control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about outside shit. Like, if it's windy, stay as low and aerodynamic as possible. Like, if it's rainy, like, you just deal with it. You can control what you can control. Like, and your race plan should be a reflection of that. You should be able to execute the race plan in any conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how to change a flat tire?
Nope.
Okay, so then that's that. That's
well, I know. I mean, theoretically, I know how to.
Yeah, yeah.
So
what happens if you get a flat on the bike?
We're going to have to talk about that. Yeah. I mean, what do? You're required to just change it.
What I would do is
Or are there people you can like?
There are people on the course,
but they might be 10 minutes behind.
But the you could be on the opposite. I think there's probably 2 or 3 roaming mechanics on the course, but it's 56 miles, so it could be 15 minutes before you see one of them.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I would do is just change the tire.
Yeah. Okay.
But what if I were you? And if I mean, it's not difficult to change a tire. Like you could learn pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you just start to change it the best that you can, and eventually someone will come and help you if you can't do it yourself.
Yep.
But in the end, like...
You know what? If that happens, like...
But don't, like... You know. Don't let it spoil the...
Of course.
Shit will happen. Like,
yeah.
I did Ironman Texas. I got 2 flat tires on the bike course.
Yeah.
I was on the side of the road 90 miles into the 112-mile bike course, and I just popped my second tire, used both tubes, both CO2s. I'm like, my day is over. I'm fucked. Like, in my mind, I had quit.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no reason to go on. Like, what's the point?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So finally, one of the guys came and had the tube for me, and I got back on my bike. And I said, I guess I'll ride back to town. right? Yeah. So I rode back to town the last 22 miles.
Yeah.
I got into transition two. I was like, nah, I might as well go run. Like, yeah. I knew the time wasn't going to be what I wanted it to be, but I still finished the race.
Like, I mean, I'm doing this to compete.
Yeah.
But like, I'm also here to finish it.
Yeah, of course.
Finish a half
Iron. And like that, this speaks a little bit more to the entire thing, but like throughout the day, like don't forget like to look around and like really take it all in and embrace it. Like we're skipping to like the pep talk that you get at the end of the podcast, but like the here and now fitness, like part of the here and now is like try to live in the moment, right? Like enjoy the moments for what they are. Like you've trained, you've put all this work in, like let it be a celebration of all the hard work you've done. Like enjoy the moments, look around, like breathe the fresh air, look at the mountains, like appreciate the competitors, like appreciate what you're capable, like healthy enough to do. Like not everyone is so lucky enough to be healthy enough to be out there and doing what you're going to do, you know?
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Yeah. So, all right. So bike.
Back
so,
into T2.
So yeah. So now we're in T2. I am obviously just throwing on a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
So is T2, is it just back at my station?
Yeah.
The same station.
Again, the athlete guide tells all.
Okay.
It's so some courses have split transitions where T1 and T2 will be in different spots, but this one is all in the same transition. So yes, you'll be back in your spot.
All right, back to my same spot, throwing on the shoes, grabbing nutrition.
Yeah.
What is same kind of nutrition protocol?
So what I do is I have a race belt where you have to put the actual bib that has your number on it, and the belt itself has a little pouch in it. So what I typically
do. So you need to do that. What do you do on the bike when you have?
You have stickers that go on your bike.
Okay, and then when you run,
you have a timing chip. On
yeah,
your ankle.
I got a belt. I got a like.
No. So there's a timing chip. Okay.
Okay.
We skip way.
Oh, jeez.
The day before the race, you pick up your packet. In your packet, there's the timing chip that you wear on race day around your ankle.
Yep, I know
that. You cross the electronic mat; it records your time throughout the day. You have stickers for your bike, your helmet.
Yep.
You have to put all your race numbers on your bike and on your helmet, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have a bib that goes on the run belt. So when you set up your transition, T1 and T2, you basically have to just go through your mental checklist to make sure, like, this is the order that I'm going to grab shit. This is the order that I'm going to lay this stuff out, right? I put my helmet there. I put my bike shoes behind it. I put – basically, that's it for T1. Like, on right next to it, I have my run shoes, my hat, my pair of sunglasses inside the hat, and then my run belt with the nutrition already loaded in it in the – all ready to go, right? So you come in. I usually take my shoes off before I get into transition, pedal the last couple hundred yards of the bike with my feet just on top of the shoes, right? You reach down, undo your shoe, take your foot out, put your foot on top, couple pedal strokes, do the other side. So that way when you get to the dismount line, you basically get to the dismount line, your feet, your shoes stay in your bike, and then you just run back to the rack in your socks.
Yep.
Is how I do it. But again, to do it for the first time on race day.
Yeah, so you still have to bring your bike back.
You have to go rack your own bike. Yes.
So you're rolling it back.
Yep.
Okay.
So then you throw all your run shit on. All your run belt is loaded up already with all your shit that you need.
Yep.
And then you go again. You know where your bike is in transition. You know how to get out to start the run.
And
on race day, you just follow the traffic, right? Yeah. You're going to be in the meaty part of the, like, there'll be people around you that are going in the same direction.
Yeah.
But you can't always rely on other people. You should know.
Yeah. And nutrition-wise, same protocol. I'm doing like
Every 30 minutes a gel, right?
Every 30 minutes.
So if you're gonna run for an hour and a half, that's only
it's
you'd
only
want
three or four.
Yeah,
I'll bring four.
You don't even need to carry them. If you have a good stomach, use what's on the course, right? You're gonna get off the bike. You're gonna have six gels in, so you want to do the last sip of the bottle right before you get off. That's your last gel.
Yep.
So theoretically, you just smashed a gel before you started your run, right? So now you have a half an hour before you need the first one. If you feel like you need something, you can take it.
Yeah.
I would probably have two or three in my run pouch, but also on
the
course.
At
the aid station, they have banana. Yeah. They have the Martine.
They have bananas?
Yeah.
All right.
Bananas. They have Martine gels. They have Coca-Cola, water, Gatorade, and then they might have some other stuff too, like chips and stuff for people
to
go slow.
And
so you only need to carry one or two. Like, I don't know if you've ever tried the Martine gel.
No.
But it's I like it, but.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's not big a deal to carry two or three gels.
Yeah, I'll run with two or three gels.
Yes. Or you just eat bananas
And I can pound bananas too.
And you need salt too, yeah? You have salt?
Yeah, I got my base salt.
Yeah. So I usually put one base salt.
All right, so let's talk base salt real quick.
Every half an hour.
every half an hour.
A lick off
starting
the base
on the bike.
Immediately.
Yep.
Especially if it's going to be hot.
Yep. Okay.
Every half hour. Like, if you look at the directions on the base salt itself, it says, I think every 5 miles, take a lick, which is every 15 minutes.
Yep.
And every mile on the run, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So, if you can stomach it, like, the stuff will save you on a hot day.
Okay. Okay. All right. I think we covered.
And then on the run, like, you, the only other thing is make sure, like, don't skip it on the run. Like, you'll feel good. Every time you get off your bike, you've just biked pretty hard, and you're like, okay, I'm done
with
that.
It's so nice.
Yes, to be done with
it,
and the first few miles, like, always feel good, right? Like, you're running fast. It's race day. All of a sudden, like, for you, especially running is your strong suit, you're going to be feeling great. Don't start to skip your nutrition at that moment.
Yeah.
Like, stay with the nutritional program because you're going to need that come 10 miles down the road.
Yeah.
Right? So stick with it. Like, if you get to 3 or 4 miles left and you want to skip that last gel and you feel like going for it, go for it.
Yeah.
But don't skip the first or second one.
Okay. Okay.
And always, every time I run through the aid stations, on a half, on the full, not so much, but on the half, I always run through the aid stations. So you, like any road race where you're running through an aid station, grab the cup, throw it in your mouth, get as much down as you can, take the next cup, throw it in your face, keep the body cool. Like, even on the bike is the same thing. Like, if you're going to roll through the aid stations at a relatively moderate pace, like, grab one of the squeezy water bottles, the Poland Spring sport bottles, and I just, like, literally spray it all over my back, like, try to keep the core body temp down. It makes a big difference, right? So keep yourself cool with the water from the aid stations however you can.
Mm-hmm. All right, so 39-minute swim.
Okay.
What do we got on the bike? Are you checking elevation and stuff? Do they give that?
Oh, dude, it's super flat. It's like,
it's super flat?
Yeah, it's super flat.
Let's go. All right.
Total elevation gain for 56 miles, 1,000 feet.
That's
nothing.
A third of what we did today.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. It's nothing. It's super flat.
All right. Love it.
And on the run, I didn't look at the run.
So what are we saying on the bike?
Hold on.
All right.
Run?
I think it's pretty similar.
562. So in 13 miles, you gain half as much elevation in running as you do a 56 miles of biking. So the run is hilly.
Run's a little hilly.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's okay for you.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So now I'm going to predict your splits. We're going to write it down, yeah? distance, 56 miles. I'm going to use my calculator to cheat. Boop, 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 boop. Okay. It's going to be... 39.5-minute swim.
Uh-huh.
Transition, I don't know how far it is, but it'll be a few minutes for transition.
Yep.
Hold on.
What is a decent
It all
transition?
Depends on the setup. It's like, hard to know until you see it.
But under
3 minutes. Between 3 to 5 minutes.
3 to 5 minutes.
Okay. For T1.
Yep.
Because you have
T2's faster.
T2's always faster.
Yeah.
Because you... Always.
You're just throwing
chasing. So I'm going to say 3 minutes for T1, 2 minutes for T2.
Okay.
39... Damn, good. Watch this. 39. I'm going to say 39:30 on the swim.
39:30.
2:33 on the bike.
2:33 on the bike.
Which is 21.96 miles an hour.
Ooh.
On a flat course.
Wow, you're believing in me on the bike.
On a flat course.
21.9.
And then for the run, we're going to say...
Wow.
I don't need
do
to
you
do
hear
it because...
21.9?
Because I already know. Probably a 1:38:50.
1:38.
Yeah, which is a 7:32 mile.
7:30. Yep.
Which gives you a total time.
That's what I was thinking. 7:30.
Total time of 4:56:20.
Okay, so.
With a 3 minute with a 3 minute transition one and a 2 minute transition two.
Yeah. So if I broke so five, that would
you'd
be
have
like
a good day.
That'd be a real good day.
Of course.
For somebody of my.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that you can.
Okay.
You'll do that.
Yep.
If things go as
that's
planned
a fast
and
bike.
You execute it. But, dude, I'm telling you, like, you were riding fast today. Like,
I know, but
you keep up.
Yeah.
And you weren't drafting. Like, you were back off. You weren't on our wheel. You were riding on your own.
Yeah.
And it's flat. You don't, like, the, like, today, every time you come to an intersection, you start and stop. You start from 5 miles an hour and build back up to, like, there were times we were coasting along at 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
For 5 miles. And you were right there with us.
Yep.
Like, your heart rate was probably a little high, but.
Yeah, a little high.
Yeah, but. It was also
probably
85 and humid.
Yeah, right. Right, dude. Well, I think, I mean, that was all my questions. Apparently I need to learn how to change a tire.
Well, now I feel like as a coach that I haven't instilled that into everyone how important it is until a race before the week. So yeah, I'm excited for you. We have Jorge told me today, actually, he's going up to race. So you'll have a teammate there.
He's doing back to back.
Guy's nuts. He's going to Timberman next weekend, and then the following weekend going to Maine.
Good for him.
Yeah. And then Coach Meg is also flying in from Texas, and she's going to race.
Yep.
So I'll hook you up with her too.
Beautiful.
Yeah, she's a strong athlete. She was in Texas when we raced Texas. She was the first person in the whole field out of the water.
Oh.
Like, legit swimmer. Like, wow. The whole field, first person out of the water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she swim in college?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a great swimmer.
Yeah.
And then she flatted twice on the bike, and she DNFs.
Yep.
But anyway, she's there racing. She's getting ready for Kona, which is, I think, 6 or 7 weeks after. So she's using it as a tune-up race or an opportunity to race. So
cool.
She's excited to race, too. So I'm excited. Who's going up from your cheering squad? Anyone? Do you have people coming to cheer you on?
Cord will come.
Yeah.
I think maybe
the McCauleys usually travel, no? Friends.
You know, they would. You know, a couple of my siblings might come up.
Yeah.
I think my sister and her fiance will probably come up.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple others.
Yeah.
My parents are away.
Okay.
Otherwise, they would have.
Sure.
Yeah, Pat, are you coming?
Yeah.
Still planning on coming?
Oh, yeah.
We got Pat.
Yeah. What about Abby? Is she coming?
Maybe. Potentially TBD.
Sick. I would love to come, but I can't.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like, I've...
It's exciting.
This is a year and a half coming, you know?
Yeah.
So...
What is the biggest... if you had to choose one thing that you're worried about that could go wrong, what would it be?
One thing that could go wrong?
Yeah. Like, what... Not could go wrong, but, like, what's the biggest fear that you have? Like, what is the one thing that gives you pause and, like, gives you any kind of reservation or makes you nervous?
I mean, the only thing, honestly, I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
But the only thing is just the swim, because I haven't swam with, you know, 100 other people, you know?
You'll find open space.
Yeah. I mean, that is really it. Like, I feel okay on the bike, you know, barring anything going wrong.
Sure.
Like, I feel good there.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel good
on the
run.
What did you run that open half that we did? What did you do for a time that day?
129 The Cohasset try? Yeah.
No. The half marathon we all ran together.
I was just above 130. 130 and change.
Yeah.
And I came out way too hot. See, that was one of those things.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same for this.
Your heart rate was jacked. You ran out of...
Yeah, but I also, like, I've never felt it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'd never done a road half marathon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, an all-out road half marathon.
Sure.
So, like, I just didn't know where my edge was.
Right.
But once I know where my edge was...
But that's the beauty of the heart rate monitor. It literally tells you where your edge is.
Like, I know, but...
Yes and no, though. How no?
Because I feel like, well, when I'm running, like... Well, it depends on what you're doing. But, like...
Yeah, but...
My heart rate can be 180 on a run, and I can, like, I can hold that for a half marathon. Obviously, this is a different case, but I'm just saying, like...
Okay, so...
My heart rate
isn't
going to tell
me... What was the average heart rate for that half that we did?
I didn't wear a monitor. But it was high.
Yeah.
Like, I came out hot, you know? But I just didn't... I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yeah. And I will say, too, that, like, the lactate threshold, the zone 2, is an estimation, right? Like, if you really want to know what your actual lactate threshold was, you'd have to do it in a laboratory where, like, you create lactate, put the lactate into your blood, and they draw the blood to see, like, to the point where the threshold, whether your body can't clear the lactate out of your blood faster than your body creates it.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the actual lactate threshold. And you can't actually pinpoint that without expensive laboratory testing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which some people do because they want to know exactly where that edge is.
Right.
Right? So the way that we do it with heart rate is an estimation, but it's pretty, pretty accurate.
Right.
But also when you run enough, like, you feel it. Like, you know that,
I
can hold a 165 heart rate all day.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, then you're below your threshold.
Right.
So.
All right, man. Well, I think and I hope
we'll have to do a race recap after.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do
it. So what was your expectations? What were you going to predict for yourself? Like, do you have a time goal in your mind?
I mean, somewhere around what you said, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I like the idea of under 5.
Yeah.
You're probably predicting a little faster bike. Maybe I'm selling myself short.
Yeah.
I had myself. I'd like to maybe be a little faster on the swim. Maybe that's aggressive.
Yeah.
I won't. But I'll follow the plan.
But for the energy that you put out to gain the
one minute,
it's not worth it.
Yeah. I hear you.
You're better to swim comfortable and swim a minute slower.
Yeah, I agree.
Than to kill yourself on the swim.
So, somewhere around there on the swim, bike, you put me a little faster.
Yeah, 21. Cool. I put you just over 21.5 miles an hour.
Yep, and then run was exactly where I think I can be.
Yeah,
7:30.
Assuming calm conditions. That's my disclaimer for my prediction.
Calm. Yeah, you mean like no wind and rain and
no. Yeah, I mean if it's like 20 mile an hour steady winds, like it's a different set of conditions to deal with.
Right. But, yeah.
But hopefully you'll get good weather. Did you check the forecast? We're within the extended range.
I think it was supposed to be like a 80 degree day.
Bring the salt. What is the name of the town?
15% chance of rain. Laconia. That was literally the 10th day of the 10 day forecast.
Where are we now? 8 days out?
Let's see.
Next Sunday. 78 and overcast. Look at that. Bang.
78 and overcast. Yeah.
6 mile an hour winds. Perfect.
Well, so hopefully that stays right there.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, you just control what you can control, and you'd be okay.
All right, yeah, we'll do a recap. If people are following, I'll be posting all over Instagram. We got Pat O Media. We'll have all kinds of footage.
Yeah, cool.
Hopefully this
shout out O Media.
Yeah, hopefully this was valuable to people that are interested in triathlon that have never done one.
Sure.
And just to wrap up to say that like. I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I had no fucking clue what I was doing a year and a half ago. And here we are. I feel pretty confident.
Yeah.
And
that's the other thing.
And anybody can do that.
I totally agree. Anyway, like, the thing I was going to say before I interrupted was, I can try to impart all my own experience to you through my words, but it takes a certain amount of personal experience on your part to really get it down. Right? Yeah. Like, you're not going to go out there and expect to execute 100% perfect.
Of course. Yeah.
Like, you're going to make mistakes. You'll make screw ups. Like, all I can do is, like I said, to pass on what I've learned from my own personal experience is the most efficient way to do the logistics of the race itself to hopefully see you perform well.
Yeah.
So, I think you'll do well.
Well, thank you.
Cool.
Dude.
Good luck.
Thank you for all your help.
Sub 5 of GTFO.
So yeah. Sub 5 or we're out.
Oh, you're fired as a client. Cool.